Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Greetings, friends. It's me, Jenny, here to tell you a couple of things in this intro. First of all, what you're about to hear is our first episode of Buffy Season 9 comics coverage, specifically the first five issues of Angel and Faith. This episode went up for patrons last month, but we wanted to share it here in the main feed so that those of you who might be curious can hear what we get up to over in the patron pod feed. If you like what you hear, our next Season 9 comics episode is live over there right now. On a serious note, it is with a heavy heart that I tell you, Kristen's dad, Pete, passed away on Sunday. He was a really special guy who touched a lot of lives and was loved by many, myself included. We'll be taking a break in the feed so that Kristen can take some time and space to be with her family. We hope to return to our coverage of the X-Files second season at the end of March or the beginning of April at the latest. In the meantime, we thank you for your patience and please enjoy this episode. Hello, and welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer. Comics edition! Flip. That's the sound of the pages riffling, of course, that you know so well from our beautiful podcast.
Hi.
I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
I'm Kristen Russo, and I'm really fucking excited about the comic that I just read, so...
Is it just me, or is this way better than season 8?
This is what I signed up for. This is the party I thought I was showing up for last season, and I was very disappointed and very confused. I still am. The lift that, so this is, right, we're supposed to tell you what we're talking about. This is Live right. Through This. Live Through This is the first volume of the Angel and Faith series. So we're covering Angel and Faith season 9, Buffy season 9, and the two outliers, Spike and Willow. We have them, we're going volume by volume. The whole schedule is in the Discord. And we're starting with Angel and Faith because that is what the internet told us to do.
So we're talking about, now interestingly, Kristen, my emphasis is going to be slightly different than yours. Live Through This, parts 1-4, and then In Perfect Harmony. I always took my, I don't know if this is supposed to be a whole reference, but I feel like it's a whole reference, right?
What do you mean a whole reference?
The whole album, Live Through This.
Oh. Listen, one of us here is a musician and pays more attention to things, and one of us is not a musician.
Oh, to things.
And does not pay as much attention to things.
To things.
That makes sense. Well, I mean, did you look this up? When is...
No. Oh. When have I ever looked anything up in my life?
Well, look it up. Look it up right now. Just for dates, you know? And while you do
Through This was way, the album was, you know, mid-90s.
Oh, right. I always forget, like, we're so far away from the 90s, which actually, Jenny, when did this release?
Okay, so the whole album Live Through This came out April 12th, 1994. And the Angel and Faith comics of season 9 started coming out in August of 2011.
We're really moving forward in time. It's weird. I feel nervous. It's like I'm standing on the shores of 2024 and like the comics are getting closer and closer and closer.
Kristen, I can't stress this enough. It follows.
It follows, by the way. If you don't know, I have a queer horror movie watch club, and It Follows is the next thing that we're watching together. Early March, this coming not this Saturday, but the
it's
one
almost
after that.
Like you scheduled it deliberately while I would be on a cruise, unable to stream anything,
yes.
To exclude me on purpose.
I'm watching It Follows where Jenny cannot follow, so. but yeah, to what we were saying, this fucking rules. This comic rules. The storyline, the arcs, the emotions, the fucking dialogue, the drawings, the all of it. I was just like,
yeah,
I was happy from start to finish. This is the script for this was written by Christos Gage, art by Rebecca Isaacs. Except for Imperfect Harmony, which was done by Phil Noto or Noto. This is my shit, and we're going to talk about it. I knew that I liked it so much more than anything that I read in season 8, and that only was emphasized for me when I had to go back and try to remember Twilight, and like what Twilight was and I had to like parse it together. There's actually a line in one of the issues of Live Through This where Faith says trying to understand Twilight is like watching a David Lynch movie, to which I say rude to David Lynch because I actually understand David Lynch movies way fucking more than I understood anything about the Twilight arc in season 8. Jenny, do you want a refresher on some of the things we might want to remember from the end of season 8?
Kristen, I didn't even remember that Giles was dead. I was like, what?
The thing
I know
that's...
that I'm supposed to be retaining stuff.
The
but...
thing that's like wiggly here is that Twilight makes no sense. And so this, I think
that's
that...
the problem.
It really
and at
is.
Times it was a chore to read.
It makes no sense, and you can tell that this writer writing this issue is grappling with that reality, that like Twilight and that arc made no sense, and now we have to clean up this fucking mess that we made with this nonsensical storyline, because there's the vibe that, okay, I have so many tabs open, but the first one is for Twilight, the comic, because that is when we learn. I'm just taking us back for a second. Twilight is Angel, who explains that this identity was the only way to limit the extent of the anti-Slayers faction's damage, and that it gives Buffy somewhere to focus her energies. But then they fuck, and now there's a dimension that is also called Twilight. So don't get them confused. There's Twilight the guy and Twilight the dimension. So in this telling, it would seem that Angel is trying to do something good, right? But then he fucking kills Giles as Twilight, and there's this conversation and these words that are like, oh, the Twilight was taking over me. And it's like, but you just said you were just doing it because of the thing. Also, like, Whistler tells Angel to do this Twilight thing. And Whistler is a good dude, but the one issue I have in this Live Through This is I'm not sure how I vibe with the character of Whistler and how I understand him, but we can talk about that anyway. So that's what Twilight was, and then
I just want to flag that you're now emphasizing Live Through This.
I would like to,
that we're going on a whole journey.
I would like to clarify that I can emphasize whatever I want to emphasize.
Oh boy.
Okay,
and
so
don't I know it.
Just a refresher, the last thing that happens, at least, you know, that connects to this issue with magic is gone. And magic is gone because there was a seed that contained all the magic. And when Giles went to destroy the seed because he didn't think Buffy could do the thing. Angel killed Giles in the exact same manner that he killed Jenny Callender, which is rough stuff. And then Buffy destroyed the seed. So now we're in reality with no magic because there's no seed and no Giles because Angel, as Twilight, killed him. That's where we're picking up season 9. I would like to march to the beat of Christos Gage's tune, which is, let's just clean this mess up. We'll just clean it up and then let's move forward. Okay. So I'm here. Let's clean it up and move forward because I can't with the bullshit from season 8. I'm over it. And I am ready for season 9.
I'm happy that we've reached a place where you can be happy.
Me too. I like didn't even know what was happening to me. I was like tearing through the pages, just like loving my life, reading comics. So, I don't know, Jenny. I mean, I think we both read this as a volume. I spent the last few months sort of like gathering the volumes from various places because they are out of print and they are hard to find. But I was very satisfied when the last one arrived, and now they're in this like tidy little stack. Five volumes of Buffy, 5 volumes of Angel and Faith, and then a Spike and a Willow volume. That's how you're reading them too, in the volumes?
That's right.
All right. So,
I'm sorry. You didn't mean, you meant, you're talking about trade paperbacks when you say volumes?
I'm talking about volumes when I say volumes, so.
Oh my God.
What are you talking about?
Both the library editions and the trade paperbacks have their own volume system. I'm reading the library edition.
Library editions. Those were far too expensive for me to purchase. Jenny had
thankfully,
them.
Yeah. Thankfully, Jess worked at Barnes & Noble when these were coming out. So nice. She just snaked them as it came into existence.
Incredible. I mean, honestly, if you guys are ever struggling financially, just fucking sell those because they cost a lot of money. Anyway, so in my volume, my non-library volume, all of these are together. And why I brought that up, Jenny, is because I feel like we can discuss them together. I don't know that we have to necessarily demarcate so clearly between issue and issue.
Yeah, well, you know what's nice about not to like go to town on season 8, but this just feels like much more cohesive and thus easier to talk about.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you remember when we did the whole 30, Jenny, but
barely. It was
a long time ago.
It was a hollow feeling time.
It was a very hollow feeling time, and I convinced myself that grapes were actually so good and they were just great. And who needed chocolate anyway?
Yeah. Grapes are basically chocolate. That's just
grapes
simple
are
math.
Chocolate. Why did we even invent chocolate? We had grapes the whole time. And then when the day came that I ate chocolate again, the grape became a grape. And that is what has happened to me here. As soon as I read the chocolate bar that is Live Through This Volume 1, I saw the grape that was season 8 in its entirety. No offense to grapes, I still do like them. Okay, so what do you want to talk about here? Giles is dead and Angel and Faith have teamed up.
What do you want to talk about here? Giles is dead.
What is there to talk about if there's no Giles?
You ever have a bunch of tentacles come swirling out of your mouth?
Honestly, no. And since today, this very day, we aired our coverage of The X-Files Season 2, Episode 2, The Host, I would prefer that you not say things like that to me because I have barely recovered.
I'm so sorry.
This is such a cool storytelling device. The whole first issue opens up with us reading basically Giles' Watcher diary, where he wrote about this experience that he had with this little girl who has a big tentacle demon inside of her. And it's really fucking rad because it does this like double lift of telling us the story of what happened to this girl and the demon, but also giving us Giles's words and his like little sidebar about like, no, I never wanted kids actually, because other people's kids are enough.
Quite enough.
Yeah. And then we pick up with like Angel and Faith returning to the scene because they have to like take care of this demon once and for all, because Giles died in between his last entry and now.
Imagine me reading this and being like, wait, hang on.
Wait, where's Giles?
I was like, what do they mean dead? Is this because I'm reading the...
Yeah,
is this because we're starting with the angel books?
No, no. Oh. I think that another thing that I loved about this little arc with this demon inside of this girl and Giles only half finishing it is that the vibe is that he has to bind the demon like as a first step, because he does not have the tools he needs to actually destroy the demon. And the way you bind this demon is by giving it a day from your life. And I assume that you have to pick a significant day. And then once you do that, you don't remember it anymore. And what Angel and Faith find out when they kill the demon once and for all is that the day that Giles gave to bind this demon was his day with Jenny Callender.
Ooh! Where they fell in love. Well, here's the thing. Do they specifically say that he had to choose, or is it just like,
oh, the demon,
the spell senses, the demon senses the day that like means the most to you and is like, pluck?
Yeah, or like, okay, here's an even sadder thought. I don't know if he chose or the demon chose, but what if he chose and it didn't have to be important? Like, it could be any day, but he just couldn't live with it anymore. He didn't want to remember it anymore.
No.
Because it was so sad. Which is like, also
I hate
kind
that.
Of, it, I mean, it's also kind of fun, well, whichever way you slice it, because we get the Mora. Is that how you say that? Mora demon?
Yeah.
In these issues. And so obviously the Mora demon is the demon that was responsible for I Will Remember You, which is a very similar vibe of like Buffy loses this whole day and Angel keeps it. So anyway, I just like that. I feel sad and emotional and excited about it all at the same time, which is how I'm supposed to feel when I'm in the Buffyverse. So
yeah. There's feelings.
There's feelings.
The emotional intelligence of these comics is off the charts, especially when compared to season 8.
Yeah, traded our Centaur Dawn for feelings, and we're happy about the trade, you know?
I mean, no, there were, now that you've reminded me of Centaur Dawn, I mean, there was some really funny stuff in there. But this just feels, that felt like a different thing, and this feels like we're, like, back in the Buffyverse.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So I just want to, if I may, tell you a little bit about Christos Gage.
Oh,
because I was just like reminding myself, okay, who wrote all the season 8 arcs? And there's a lot of Joss. There's some Jane Espenson. There's like Drew Z. Greenberg, and there's Doug Peacher. Like, these names that we know are like popping in. And then there's like an arc that was written by Brian K. Vaughan, who created Runaways and Why the Last Man and Saga. And if I'm remembering correctly, when Brian K. Vaughan started writing Buffy, Joss traded off and wrote an arc of Runaways.
Oh!
And no offense to anybody, but I found in reading them, I read the Runaways Joss arc in real time and was like, well, this doesn't feel like Runaways.
Mm.
And reading the Brian K. Vaughan arc of Buffy was like, this doesn't really feel like Buffy.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure a big part of that is sort of like the larger, the mega arc of season 8, which is Twilight, which I'm going to guess was Joss's brainchild.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all like, ooh,
yeah,
keep it. And you know, you can maybe there's a degree of like, you can only work with what you've got there, and like that's limiting, and maybe like that tripped Brian K. Vaughan up and maybe some of the other people who were used to writing for these mm-hmm. characters as well. Christos Gage, let me tell you about him. According to Wikipedia, he's an American screenwriter and comic book writer known for his work on the TV series Daredevil. Nice. Hawaii Five-O. Hello.
Wow.
Don't mind if I do. You telling me Christos Gage was running around writing for Daniel Day Kim in a Hawaiian shirt?
Wow.
Yes, please. Law and Order Special Victims Unit, junk. and he's written, you know, Angel of Faith, of course, and then some Avengers Academy, Amazing Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man.
Maybe it's like, so, I mean, he had not written any Buffy stuff before this, right?
Yeah, it looks like this is his first contribution to the Buffyverse.
And maybe that's part of the power, right? Like, maybe for him being able to dig into, I'm sure, I mean, clearly a universe he's familiar with for the first time was different than these folks who have been writing these stories for years at this point and were like, let's do this fun thing and this other fun thing. And for, I mean, you know, I'm just like ruminating here, but maybe for someone who was just coming to it for the first time, they just wanted to take a crack at the thing that was so good about it in the first place, which is maybe why we like it so much.
Yeah.
I can't find, I was reading something earlier and I can't find where it was, but there was something about the rights of the Angel comics and like, I don't know if this is, if it's connected to the Twilight of it all, but it's possible that if the rights for Angel comics were not in the possession of Dark Horse, et cetera, at the beginning of season 8, that might be why this like,
oh, they had to have him in a mask.
Right. And like maybe some of that
Twilight.
Mask.
Oh my God. Amazing.
So
amazing.
Someone,
yeah. Because,
yeah.
Because Angel, there was a series called Angel After the Fall that came out through IDW. That was the publisher on that series. And
yes.
I remember that being a pretty good read.
So,
my God. This is, I'm cracking up.
And like,
is
again,
what happened?
Those of you who know more or are not like actively recording a podcast right now, so can maybe look it up more than I can right now, you can let us know a little more about that. But, you know, I understand even from my vantage point how when you're trying to sort of like fold something in, Jenny and I, when Jenny and I have a blank page with the book and we need to write, it's like hard, but you know, you're creating it from the beginning. But there have been a couple of experiences in our book writing process where we've written something, but then we need to make it something else. And it is messy, hard work. So, you know, again, I don't know that that's what's happening.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, check this out because, okay. So Angel After the Fall over at IDW wrapped up in April of 2011. Last Gleaming, the last installment of the major Twilight, like season 8 business over at Dark Horse, wrapped up June 2011. And in the editor's column in the back of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Riley, the one-shot released by Dark Horse Comics, editor Scott Alley announced that Angel Comics would be returning to Dark Horse in late 2011.
Okay.
So there we go.
So yeah. So,
I'm,
you know,
dying. I can't believe that's why they put Angel in a little mask and made him fly around. It was a rights issue. I respect it more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's not like, and we know, I mean, you know, of all of the complications of Joss aside, or at least on the shelf, like we know Joss and Jane and the Day, like these are incredible writers, the incredible writers. So it's not a reflection on like all of a sudden these writers who have written incredible things just like can't write a story that makes sense. Like obviously there are outside factors and we understand that. But anyway, let's talk about
look at Jenny Calendar and Giles falling in love. They are lying on a picnic blanket with two wine glasses. Pointing up, Jenny is pointing up at the sky, the night sky. Eee! Kristen, do you think she's looking up at something that looks maybe like this?
Oh my God. Jenny, Jenny does this. You probably know. I probably said it already in a podcast somewhere, but Zoom has given Jenny the ability to give me a double thumbs up, which launches fireworks, or for her to give me the peace sign, which launches a bouquet of balloons across the screen. And it happens to me all the time. And both of those things just happened for me.
Do you think they're looking at fireworks and it's helping them fall in love?
Yes, definitely. Or they're looking at Superman. You know, it's a bird, it's a plane. Superman.
Yeah, she does look a little more activated than I would expect from fireworks.
Right? She's
more
like, look at that.
Superman point. It's a bird. It's a plane.
It's Twilight.
There we go.
I love, so just talking about the art a little bit, I already mentioned how the killing of Jenny Calendar and the killing of Angel was nearly identical. And there's this side-by-side panel on the next page, Jenny, where we get the flashback from Sunnydale High School with this iconic sort of half-moon window.
What you want to do, Kristen, is find an arch and then snap a neck below it.
I mean, honestly, the arch that is created by the snapping of the neck in the comic really nice with the arch of the doorway for Giles and the window for Jenny. So it is artistically beautiful. You got to give it that. All right. So we have other characters who are, I think, introduced, right? We did not meet Nadira and we did not meet Pearl and Nash. We're meeting them for the first time. So do you want to talk about them a little
bit?
For
better or worse.
Yeah. But that's, I think, for Pearl and Nash, not Nadira.
Yeah. Pearl and Nash are giving sort of like demonic Lannister twins.
Yeah, or like if the powers that be turned evil, like, they kind of were. I don't really understand. But remember the powers that be in the Angel TV series? Like those two?
Yeah, yeah. You can almost see the transition between their toga thing to like this like black and white palette with like these calf high gladiator sandals.
Yeah.
On her and... Do you think that we're seeing Christos Gage's Hawaii Five-0 roots in Nash's suit?
Maybe. This is another thing that I struggle with because these are leftovers from Twilight, right? Pearl and Nash killed Nadira's whole squad of slayers in Portugal under the command of Twilight. And... if Twilight was some kind of like secondary soul that Angel had swallowed that was overpowering him, then maybe. But, you know, it's just hard for me to believe that Angel would have been okay with the killing of these vampire slayers and or Giles. But regardless,
Kristen,
that's the story.
A dude in a mask and a trench coat who can float appears near you and floatingly duster flapping in the breeze commands you to do really anything, a task of any kind. Do you do it or are you like...
I think I say what's in it for me. That's my instinctual response. You know?
Let me take it up a notch. Fuck, marry, kill, Pearl, Nash, Twilight.
Fuck, marry, kill, Pearl, Nash, Twilight. Okay, well, I'm probably going to fuck Twilight because that seems interesting. And I'm going to marry Pearl and I'm going to kill Nash because I think without Nash, maybe Pearl and I could have a nice, quiet life together.
You can fix her.
I can fix her.
Okay.
What about, I mean, we see, I'm actually, maybe I made the wrong choice there because I've seen what can happen when Twilight is fucked and it is really intense. So I don't know.
Yeah. Are you ready to do that across the sky?
I don't think so. But I'll maintain my choice so that I can leave room for your choice, Jenny. What are your picks?
I think fuck Nash. Marry Twilight, kill Pearl.
All right. As long as we're separating Pearl and Nash, I think we're okay.
I think it's important to separate Pearl and Nash. I think Twilight, while he might be a bit of a handful now, it's only a matter of time before he reverts to his brooding quest for redemption self.
Got
you know,
it. So you're not
the pendulum will
him.
Swing back.
You're just waiting.
Yeah, it's like, why fix what will fix itself in time?
So Nadira. Nadira is struggling because she witnessed the death of all of her slayer, co-slayers, slayer pals, gal, slayer pals, whatever. And she is on a vengeance mission to kill Pearl and Nash and Angel, who, like, the world now knows was Twilight. And this is complicated because Faith is working with Angel, which we should talk about. Let's talk about Faith's decision to work with Angel, despite the fact that he is trying and working for most of this volume to bring Giles back to life.
Name a more iconic duo.
I can't.
They're best friends.
I fucking can't.
And I think that Faith is coming from a place where she's like 50%. I have Angel's back. To the degree, like, to whatever extent, like, within the realm of, you know, ethical correctness.
Yeah.
Right? And then the other 50% of her is like, and I'm one of few people who could put him down if he needs to be put down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a slippery slope, but honestly, I trust Faith more with this responsibility than I would trust Angel with the response. I feel like Angel really
For
slides
sure.
down a slope, you know, whereas I think that Faith has a little more sticking power. Also, I want you to know that at the end of the first issue, we're in Giles's house, because just in case you forgot, Giles left every single thing to Faith, which that's what we're talking about, buddy. Good fucking job. Felt guilty about not giving her a place to sleep for the last however many seasons.
Some might say too little too late. I just say, thank God it's not never.
Yeah, same. But there's the last frame of the first issue is they're in, you know, Giles's house, and there's this picture of, like, small Giles with two women. And I was like, did Giles have
lesbian? Does Giles have two moms?
No, I didn't even mean to find it, but they are his aunts. He was raised by his aunts. And these are his two aunts.
Yeah, sure. His aunts. Yeah, and this is my roommate.
Yeah. I also live
roommates.
With my good friend, Aunt Kristen and Aunt Avanti.
Although Sabrina, famously a teenage witch, mm-hmm. you know, was raised by her aunts.
Do you just know
so
that
it's
off
not
the top
impossible.
Of your head? Sometimes you know things that I am, like, floored by.
Well, I watched the entirety of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
The new one or the old one?
The new one.
Oh, okay, okay.
The old one is just called Sabrina the Teenage Witch, I believe. But the Kiernan Shipka one is The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And it's it exists in the Riverdale verse, so I had to watch it. And there are some just really spectacular performances throughout.
Wonderful.
Most especially by the aunts. The aunts are one of the highlights.
Okay, so spoilers. I'm not going to say spoilers, don't worry. But these are his aunts, and one of them is named Lavinia Fairweather, who is the sister of Sophronia and Edna, and the great aunt of Rupert Giles. I'm not even going to read anymore, because the thing that I've learned by looking up Giles's aunts is that they debut in a comic called Women of a Certain Age,
which it's coming up.
Exactly, is Angel and Faith number 10. I think that's issue 10, not volume 10.
Right. It's like it's a sort of single issue, the way that In Perfect Harmony is. It's got a different artist
in the next and in our next volume.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So questions about the nature of the relationship between these two women, I guess, will be told to us very soon, which is exciting. I did not know that until right now.
And this is all happening. This is all happening in England.
Yes.
I just was like looking at these two little freaks spattered in blood in their little black and white outfits thinking, I wonder if Kristen read them with British accents. And I was like, oh, right. This whole comic is in England. So
yeah, I guess,
that would
yeah.
be the default.
I didn't read anything in a British accent, actually. Maybe that's just not something that I can do.
Sure it is.
It just doesn't come naturally to me. It's just like when I read a comic, I just read it like I am reading it out loud. You know, like I'm doing the voices for everyone. Like I don't hear voices. I just
okay.
Okay. So first of all, Jenny, at some point in this journey, we learn that Faith has started wearing two knives and an X across her back, like a little backpack, but just knives. And I love it. And I just want to make sure I don't forget to say it.
Wait, can you cite a page where I can see this?
Yes, it is the third or so page of the second issue where Nadira is in this alleyway fighting off a vampire with a gun. Rude. She's walking away with her little briefcase of Mora blood.
Oh. Yep, there it is. There it is.
Pretty great, right?
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty great. She... Oh, the other art thing that I want to point out in issue two is, so Nadira is in the alleyway. She's fighting this like horned skull demon who's really cold inside because he's just a big void. And we'll learn later he's distributing Mora blood to heal people at great cost, etc. But back to the vampire with a gun in this alleyway. Angel, in a real Angel Investigations manner, just like a silhouette at the back of the alley, beheads this guy. And it is, out of the entire volume, these five issues, it is my favorite panel in the whole thing. It's just the silhouette of this vampire, and his head is detached from his body, and the sword is going through the space where his neck once was, and there is like blood spatter at top and bottom, but everything is just black because it's all in silhouette. And the vampire is saying "irk," and the sound effect is "slick." I love it.
Yes, yes, yes. It's good. It's very comics.
Yeah. Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey, Kristen.
Oh, hey, Jenny.
You know how we're always obtaining new lotions and creams for our faces?
You know, I really do. We talk about skincare more than anyone probably has a right to know.
It's true. If you, like us, are tired of cycling through ineffective skincare trends and overcomplicated routines, then let us tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
And here's the deal. The reason that OneSkin is very different from anything else is because they use a proprietary OS1 peptide. If there was time, I would play the medical doctor jingle for myself just for saying that. It's the first ingredient that is proven to actually switch off the aging cells that cause the lines and the wrinkles and the thinning skin. And they have a bunch of studies to back this up. We've both received their products and just started using them, and they are awesome. I also love the fact that they come with refillable inserts. So you sort of get your plastic container one time, and then if you like the product and you keep going, they just send you the little packet that goes inside. So if you want to learn more about them, you should check them out at oneskin.co. They are the world's first skin longevity company. They focus on cellular aspects of aging and keep your skin looking and acting healthier for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code BUFFERING at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code BUFFERING. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Also, in the panel, like the page-wide panel right below that. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this demon's little chicken legs? His little mummy-wrapped chicken legs.
I didn't notice them. I've been watching, I've been rewatching season one of Sex Education, and there's a guy, I can't remember the character's name, but there's a guy in the first season who wanted to be a professional bodybuilder, but his legs are too tiny. And so, like, they call him like a lollipop and like various other, like, ice cream cone, because he's like really ripped. Like, the top of his body is really ripped, but then he just has like tiny little legs, which is what I'm being reminded of by looking at this demon. Interesting. So he's like a chicken bottom half, person top half until the head, which is a skull, but maybe the skull is a mask over the horns.
No, I think the skull is the, I think he's just like a kind of got a demon goat skull thing going on for a head.
Cool. And I love that he's just a void. I was like, you know what, that's sometimes that's real relatable content. Just inside, just a void.
Well, yeah. Look at that. It looks like the opening of the Dune popcorn bucket.
Joanna Robinson introduced us to the Dune popcorn bucket, which we did not know about. And now we do. And if you didn't, well, why don't you just go right on ahead and Google that. Have a good time.
You're going to be so rewarded.
Okay, so there's Mora Blood, and that's like the vibe, is we're chasing Mora. Everyone's chasing Mora Blood. Angel wants it to reanimate Giles's body because the body and the soul are demarcated. This is an example. When we watched, when we listened to Slayers, the new Audible series, Jenny, there was a lot of like wiggly stuff that was kind of hard for me to follow at points when it came to lore. And this is a moment where I'm like, oh, I understand this lore. Like, it's really clearly laid out that Angel is saying spells can reanimate bodies, but souls are entirely different. The question everyone would have is asked by Faith. Well, if you could do that, why? Obviously, you tried forever to like bring Cordy back. Like, you would have brought Cordelia back if you could do this. And Angel's response is that Giles, it's a little wiggly. I'll concede a little bit of wiggliness. But he says Giles is a warlock and a watcher. So he's been like sort of entrenched in this magic for so long. And that is the reason why Angel thinks he might be able to also restore his soul. The little bit of wiggly I got there was me being like, okay, but Cordelia also was like half demon at this point. So she was also steeped, but maybe not steeped enough. I don't know. Discuss amongst yourselves.
Well, are demons inherently magic? Does becoming half demon impact your soul in some way?
I guess I don't know, but she was having, I mean, like, she was having visions, which feels like it at least borders on magic. And by the time, I mean, wasn't she like a fucking ethereal being by the time? Whatever.
Right.
Well, we've given you something to think upon, but regardless, Angel believes that he can do both of the things needed to bring somebody back.
What if Cordelia's ending was actually happy because what she got was the rest that Buffy desired, briefly had, and then was ripped away from her?
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I like that if we can erase everything else surrounding it.
Correct. I like that at Giles' flat, there is a barrel just full of spears. There's a lot of other artifacts and weaponry about.
Yeah.
But most of the weaponry is like mounted in a decorative way, but the spears feel very utilitarian.
Yeah, he's got like
in case
a little...
of intruders, spears.
Like where most people have umbrellas.
Yeah, or like a potted plant.
I do. I just noticed his little wall of like hanging swords, which is nice. It's kind of like what Avanti is doing in the garage for her tools, but instead it's for swords. Love it.
Tools, weapons, what's the diff?
Okay, so let's talk about, there are a couple of big things we have to talk about. One is that Faith sort of says to us that she knows that Angel isn't going to be able to do this because Giles told her it can't be done. And this is incredibly gutting because we get this flashback where Giles and Faith are together and Faith is asking Giles if they can bring not Deputy Mayor Allen, which I love. I don't even think about him. Is Faith's full accounting of Allen. But Professor Worth. Because she killed Professor Worth. Remember, I like forgot that that even happened until I read this.
The volcanologist.
Yeah. Yes. And she says that his daughter just drops flowers into the void that is Sunnydale. And it is haunting Faith. And it, this is like, poof.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read what past Giles said to Faith. About what she was moving through. He says, we can punish ourselves for the things like we've done wrong in pointless, indulgent ways, acts that serve no purpose beyond wallowing in self-pity, or we can try to atone for them, not to erase what we did, not to justify the unjustifiable, but to counter the evil we've done with a lifetime of good. And this is, you know, Angel's whole heartbeat. This is the whole vibe, is you atone, you make up for the things that you've done instead of rolling around in the misery of what you've done.
I'm picturing a doorway in a house that is like leading to a hallway, moving like left to right, and I'm picturing Raylan Givens sliding from out of doorframe into doorframe in his socks and his big tall hat, Risky Business style, to say, did somebody say justified?
Just incredible. Our book will be out in 2025 and you can read more tellings just like that one from Jennifer Owen Young's.
What the hell?
What? You, I was, I'm being serious. I mean, I'm not being serious about like, there will be no Raylan. At least I don't think that he'll be in our book yet.
Yeah.
But you just have a, you know, a way with words. You are a wordsmith.
Mm. Oh, Lord, have mercy on me.
Okay.
A sinner.
So the Pearl and Nash are after the same blood. Everybody wants the blood. Should we talk about what, first of all, Faith wears a dress to a party because she's undercover. And this is the kind of dress I actually can imagine Faith wearing. So I was not insulted by the choice. It is not the cherry little sundress that the mayor had her in. It's a slinky little red thing. And if she's going to wear a dress, yeah, this would be it.
I like Angel being like, oh, yeah, we're undercover. I barely recognize you in a dress.
Yeah. So they're after the same blood that Pearl and Nash are after at this party. Pearl and Nash wind up being the ones to take the last of it. The Mora demon wants to die an honorable death, so puts a sword through the little jewel in his forehead. And Faith and Angel find out what happened to all of the people that went missing after they got this Mora blood. Do you want to talk about that, Jenny?
You know, I do. In the issue before the party issue,
yeah,
we see Faith and Angel asking around the friends and family of people who maybe obtained some Mora blood, and some of them were healed, some of them disappeared, some of them fell back into addiction and wandered off into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And what we discover at this party is that the blood that was extracted after the seed was destroyed was corrupted, right? And it could not do, it didn't have the same healing properties. It instead...
Well, it did. It just never could stop. So it just regenerated and regenerated and regenerated and regenerated without the ability to stop its regeneration.
Right, right, right. Rendering the people who took it in constant pain and almost unable to die.
Yeah. It's really awful. And Faith and Angel kill them all for their own, you know, benefit. That's what they want at this point, because this can't be undone. And they are, like Jenny said, in constant pain. So yeah, that was another hard thing for me to read in a way that I was like, oh, here I am back in the Buffyverse where it hurts good, you know?
Yeah. And bad.
And bad.
Oh, you also scooted right past.
I'm just scooting. I'm just dancing around. We can go wherever. Right.
I don't want to miss the introduction of Alasdair Combs.
Oh, my favorite guy.
Especially with this little gold dragon that he has, he really reminds me of the Cain and Abel that appear in the Sandman comics.
Never met her.
I don't know. You didn't watch the Sandman, the series?
I did watch the series, yeah.
Oh, well, they're there.
Okay.
They're the two brothers who one of them's always killing the other one. They have a dragon.
right. Oh, yeah. Oh, I loved those guys. Okay, yeah. Well, that was a great show.
Yeah. He's got a lot of info. He's got a lot of specimens. And after Angel and Faith visit him, he tracks down Faith to talk to her alone, to be like, you can't bring Giles back. You mustn't. You dare not.
Yes, Faith has this, like, really complicated couple of pages where, like, Nadira is saying, like, well, you know what to do, right? We trust you, Faith. And she's like, what? Who? How did I become a grown-up? And then Alistair is like, hey, you're in charge here, because he can't do what he's saying he's going to do. And Faith is like, goddamn, when did I become an adult and have so much responsibility?
Many have asked this very question.
I also love that. So one thing that I love about Alistair, is that how we say it? Alistair. That he has no magic left, but he has all this knowledge that is still really useful. And so, like, the thing that they track is that a Mora demon needs a shit ton of salt to survive.
Yeah,
which is fun. It's just fun. It's like, you know, there's a ton of magic here, but there's also these, like, practical elements that you can use to sleuth out these things. So the other big piece of this volume is that Angel is trying to get this blood because he wants to bring Giles back. But as we journey, Faith starts wondering how Angel will ever be freed from this, like, atonement quest where he just, like, literally cannot ever stop. It's sort of like Angel is addicted to atonement.
Seeking redemption.
Yeah, he just, like, cannot ever get enough. And Faith posits that perhaps if Angel was turned human again, that would help end this struggle for him. And I like this concept, and I also like the way that that Faith handles it in the issue, at least so far, which is that she brings it up directly. Like, she's like, hey, so about that being human thing, like, is that something you might want to consider again? There was, like, this whole Shanshu prophecy. Like, what gives, man? An angel fucking, has Angel ever been more angel in his life? He's like, I will die when a stake goes through my heart and not a moment sooner. Oh my God. Fucking drama, Angel. But what do you think about this?
I mean, I see why she's thinking about it, but it doesn't feel very big picture of her to be like, I know, it seems like a very friend thing to do. I'm going to protect my friend from, like, what he can't stop himself from doing.
Right.
But, you know, in terms of the greater good, I think the world is better with Angel in the fight.
Yeah, that's true. I can see both sides. I mean, yes, the world is better with Angel in the fight, but I also do think that there is truth, and I don't think you weren't saying that there wasn't. I think that if he was human again, he probably would find a bit more groundedness, because once you're not living forever, the world, I would imagine, feels a bit different. So, yeah, just very interesting shit. I think that the only thing, before we get to, of course, the perfect harmony of it all, the thing that we haven't touched on for me is the end and what happens at the end here. But there,
oh, you mean that Angel has reading glasses?
Yeah, and is asking for a spot of tea.
Is Angel possessed by Giles?
Yeah, so my you don't know, right? Like, you've read these, but you don't know?
I haven't actually read season 9. This is my maiden voyage.
Holy shit! So, fucking burying the lead over here, Jenny.
I forgot. I forgot that Giles died, and I forgot that I haven't read any of this before.
Well, yeah, my first theory, because obviously something's up. To be fair, we do know that Angel wears glasses. I remember seeing Angel in the television show, Angel sitting in an armchair and wearing glasses. I cannot tell you when or why, but I know I lost my fucking mind about it. So I know the man has worn glasses before. But it is very much, like, pointed out, like, that's interesting. And then he asks for a spot of tea, and the whole thing ends with Faith being like, wow, that was such a great impression of Giles. And Angel's like, what are you talking about? And it's just sort of left on this question mark note. I don't know that Angel is... I think Angel's body right now has two souls inside of it. That's my theory.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
It, like, Angel's in there, but also Giles is in there. It's have you ever seen that movie with Lily Tomlin and Steve Martin? Not Mad About You, but something like that. You know, where they put Lily Tomlin's soul goes into Steve Martin's body, but Steve Martin's soul is still... Oh, my God. Why can't... I'll look up the name of the movie before we wrap so that I make sure that I say it out loud.
Well, have you ever seen a little movie called The Hot Chick, Kristen?
No, actually. I'll trade you.
In which the essence of Rachel McAdams is swapped with the essence of... Rob Schneider.
Wow, no. All of Me, it's called, is the Steve Martin, Lily Tomlin movie. Incredible. I mean, you know, there's many things in it that I'm sure did not age well at all, but the Lily Tomlin and Steve Martin sharing Steve Martin's body is got to be up there with one of the best physical comedic performances of all time, because she's got, like, one half of him and he's got the other half of him.
Oh my God,
it's really, you should watch it if for nothing else than to see the two of them together. They're very special. Lily Tomlin plays this character named Edwina, and she's, like, been very, very sick, but she's very, very rich, and so she basically, like, in her dying wish is to go into the healthy body of the, like, young, the daughter of the stable hand, so that she can live a life running around on her property, which she could never do. See, as you can tell, as I tell the story, you can already tell that there are problematic pieces all over the place. But anyway, hijinks ensue.
I'm sure the stable hand's daughter wasn't doing anything meaningful with her life.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure the stable hand's daughter had nothing to do with the hijinks that ensue. You can just watch for yourselves, should you so please. It's 1984. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, okay. I'm going that vibe. I'm going Steve Martin's body with Lily Tomlin and Steve Martin's soul, but also Angel's body with Angel's soul and Giles' soul both inside of it. That's my prediction.
Okay, I celebrate this. I feel like, you know, Angel was right there when Giles died. So,
yes, yeah, so
his body is well practiced at accepting and expelling souls.
It's so true. And also, like, he keeps avoiding the soul bit. Like, if now you're making me think about the fact that every time the soul came up, he was sort of just like, we'll deal with that later. Like, shush, 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 shush. Right now we're working on the body, but the soul, it's just magic. Just don't talk about it. So, yeah, I think you're on to something.
Okay, so speaking of being on something.
Oh, God.
In perfect harmony, listen, Harmony and Clem come to Angel and Faith because there is a Harmony sex tape being threatened to be published. She's being blackmailed with the threat of this being released to the world at large. And the big deal with this video is that she, you know, she's the sort of like poster girl, the poster vamp for good vampire human relations. And her like sort of number one rule, her vampire etiquette, is we don't sire. Mm-hmm. We don't kill and we don't sire.
Right.
But she is siring someone in this video. And Kristen, I want to first just include the caveat. Sorry. I want to first include that I maintain this is none of my business, but the way that it seems, the location of the cut from which Harmony's blood pours forth in order for the man she is siring to be able to drink it is in the middle of her boobs.
Directly between her tits.
Which,
yes,
is also where I feel like Angel drank deep of the blood of Darla.
Oh, right? Yeah, you're right. You're right. Oh, I just had a flash of that dusty Irish alleyway. Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like, did we see William drink Drusilla's blood or... I'm just trying to remember.
You're trying to figure out that if you were to get sired, would you be drinking from?
Not me. Not me personally. I'm just like, is this what lady vampires do? Like, is this the sort of standard method?
It probably, if they're siring somebody in a sexy way, which seems like the majority of the time.
Okay.
But, like, what if you're not a tits guy? What if you're an ass guy, you know? Like, is it, like, does it depend on the interests of the person being sired?
No, I think that everything is set forth by the person of, but by the vampire that's doing the siring. There we go. So if the vampire who's doing the siring likes to have their ass appreciated, then, but how do you, that's just, like, it's very, the positioning would be very awkward to.
It would be, especially, like, it's way easier to, like, hold somebody's head between your boobs than it is to hold somebody's.
I can neither confirm nor deny. But,
this is why we have these one-off issues in comics, by the way. It's so that we can talk about shit like this on the podcast as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, I'm feeling unhappy about Clem and Whistler.
Okay, I'm so happy to see more Clem. I just don't feel like this is very true to Clem. Like, I can't see Clem being in love with Harmony.
No, and that's...
No offense to Harmony, who we love, but they just don't seem like a match.
No, and Clem...
Best friends? Sure.
Yeah, but in love with her? Not really. This is not... It just... I like, you know, it's a fun story, but I feel like I wish it had wrapped itself up without it being like, oh, Clem was the blackmailer all along. I have to say that I don't.
Did you know?
Yeah.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say I don't support tapping people for their blood like a keg, but I do really appreciate the ingenuity there. I have to say, it's the vampires have got these folks hanging upside down, and they just like tap them like a little keg.
This doesn't seem like it would be comfortable. Like, have you ever hung upside down for any amount of time, Kristen?
Yeah, I mean, like as a kid. If I did it now, I would probably just die.
That does sound like you. I have a question.
Yeah.
Did you register the celebrity cameo in this issue?
I don't think that I did.
It's a man talking to Harmony right after she takes her bra off in front of a bar full of demons.
Okay, hold on. Let me go back to that page. I don't know who this guy, the one that's saying hurt you. No, who'd want to do that, love? Uh-huh. No, who's this guy? Who is he?
Okay, well, why don't you read Harmony's two dialogue bubbles and see if you can get there.
Oh, David, you know how jealous people get when they realize they don't matter as much as us. But forget all that. I think I found something that gets bigger than it looks. And it's not, oh, TARDIS. What is that? The ship? Is that a ship? Is that a...
Yeah, it's a ship. It's a police box. Yep. And do you know who pilots the TARDIS?
No, I forget. I know. I knew I was supposed to know something when I saw that word, and then...
Well, can you think of someone named David who famously played the lead role in a show where somebody might be flying a ship that is also a blue police box?
David Hasselhoff?
Kristen.
David Hasselhoff drove Kit, right?
What if I
But he
okay,
did,
what if
right?
I told you? I couldn't tell you.
It sounds like some of us know some Davids and some of us know others.
What if I told you that he was also in one Harry Potter film and that he also was in Jessica Jones? And that he was also in Good Omens. And that the character he portrays, who flies the blue police box ship, was also portrayed by Matt Smith of Hot D fame.
I have no idea.
And a much more recent iteration was played by a woman for the first time.
Oh, right. It's Doctor Who. That's TARDIS. Right. Is it TARDIS? Okay, okay. Is that how you say it? TARDIS?
What's that?
TARDIS?
Yes, that's how you say it. And so do you know what David's last name is?
Doctor Who, played by David Schwimmer. Nope, I don't. Who plays? I have no idea.
It's David Tennant.
I don't even know who that is. I have no idea who David Tennant is.
Oh, my Lord.
Let me look him up.
He plays Barty Crouch Jr. in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Like, that's fine, and I support you, but I would have never known who this guy was. My apologies to David Tennant. I have not watched Doctor Who yet, but it keeps coming to me. It keeps coming to me. It really does. And,
it's a good time. It's a good time.
Yeah, so...
Well, Kristen... Here's something really interesting that I learned from Joanna Robinson. Doctor Who, in its original run decades ago, mm-hmm. was always sort of like a stuffy, dandy, professorial type. Mm-hmm. And then the show ended until it was brought back in the mid-2000s with Russell T. Davies at the helm. And Russell T. Davies was like, we're going to make the Doctor young, sexy, and like, we're gonna make a Doctor Who fucks, and mm-hmm. we're gonna make our first Doctor like working class and feel like a little rougher around the edges for the first time. Mm-hmm. So he cast Christopher Eccleston as the Doctor, and he cast Billy Piper as Rose, the first companion of the new run, and he modeled them after Angel and Buffy.
Get out of here.
Christopher Eccleston. He's very tall, and he wears a black leather jacket. And Billy Piper is petite and blonde.
Wow.
And, yeah. Yeah, I thought you would like that.
Also, I want you to know that I probably would have gotten it sooner if you didn't keep calling it a police box, because all I saw was a blue police car in the sky, which is kind of how I got to David Hasselhoff, even though I knew it wasn't the right answer. I just assumed this whole time that Doctor Who is in a telephone booth, which I guess is kind of the same as a police box, but a little different.
Yeah, the police box looks kind of like a telephone booth.
Right, but it only calls the police, whereas a telephone booth is much more versatile. It can call anyone, right, including the police.
That's right.
Okay, well, I think that we have done it.
We've done it. Angel is not. Angel's, I feel like we should close by saying Angel is completely disinterested in the image rehab plan that Superbia cooks up for him.
Yeah. Yes.
Unsurprisingly.
Unsurprisingly. So this was fun. I have fun doing these and talking all over the place about everything. I feel like, you know, I don't know.
What a blast.
It's just, it's time. Like, yeah, it's just chill around here. Maybe it should be more chill everywhere, you know? Like,
you're saying in our feed?
Yeah, I think maybe we should chill out, Jenny. Maybe we should chill
out. I've been a long-standing supporter of the idea that you should chill out.
Okay, sure. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And as your best friend, I think you should consider taking that to heart. And then as my good friend, you know, I care about you. That's why I want you to chill out.
Great. Well, as my best friend, I would hope that you would support me on my journey of chilling out by also chilling out yourself.
Well, how could I possibly get any chiller than I already am?
Jenny, for the listeners at home, put her right arm behind her on the chair and leaned into the sunlight and looked casually out the window. Just
because I'm very chill, so
illustrate
it comes quite naturally
how chill she is. All right, Jenny, why don't we get out of here? And just so you know, we'll see if we do this or not, because right now, as I am talking, it is February 21st at 1:52 p.m. Eastern time. And as soon as we stop, I will be trying to edit this and then put it up for your ears. Our next conversation will be the first issue of Buffy, which is called Free Fall. Free Fallin'. And we will be airing that allegedly on March 6th. So if we do it, be proud of us, and you won't have very long to wait for that. The whole schedule is in the Discord, on Patreon, in all the places. I think it's even on our calendar because I did that, I think, ? And yeah, I guess, do we just flip our pages now? My pages are going to be so less, there's so many less of them than when I had the omnibus.
Oh. Yes. This was fun. And till next time. Yay.
I really made those pages work for me, you know.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.